Hi there, and welcome to the Page 2 podcast presented by Chase Oaks Church, where we go behind the headlines and beyond Sunday morning sermons to discuss in-depth issues of faith, culture, and life. I'm Eric Torrance.
And I'm Greg Holmes.
Greg, it's Holy Week.
It is indeed.
And there's so much we can talk about. I mean, it's kind of like the high season for church and for pastors, and our heads are probably spinning just a little bit right now.
It is. And for anybody who has been on staff or on teams, on worship teams or whatever, it can be a great season or just an exhausting season that you want to be done with. I know I struggle with that a little bit. But it is also, it is the most important week of the church calendar. And so we want to talk about that. And we want to talk about why that is, why that's the case, and how we might just celebrate Easter in a great way and really get the most out of it.
Greg, I think the most pressing question I have for you is, do you like Peeps?
I hate Peeps. I can't imagine why people eat
Peeps. I think that particular kind of candy is an abomination. Like, I do. I just think I think the amount of styrofoam that must make those things happen that you're ingesting at that point.
Yeah, that is not real food.
No, but seriously, obviously, there's like that's a stupid question. But right. When you actually come around Easter, there's just so much that kind of comes up into play from the silly and the silly to the serious and.
Right.
And so what I was excited about as we were talking about this conversation was not actually trying to settle on any one particular issue, but instead to actually have a sort of a grab bag that
right.
we could talk about.
Yeah. And, you know, I started under that theme of just sort of Easter grab bag, I started listing off topics that might be interesting to talk about. And there's things like Stations of the Cross that might be people, you know, and we'll talk about that a little bit. I mean, that's part of people's tradition, and other people are like, what in the world is that? Why would you walk through and do Stations of the Cross? Or even talking about kind of the historicity of the resurrection, you know, and did it really happen? Or if it did, if it happened, why? You know, why is it so important to the Christian faith? And if it's so important to the Christian faith, how come when a lot of Christians talk about the gospel message of Jesus, how come they mention the cross, but oftentimes don't mention the resurrection?
Right.
You know, does it matter or not? And then what about the whole concept of, because you know, in the New Testament, Paul talks about not just Jesus' resurrection, but our resurrection and how his resurrection, and we don't talk about our resurrection either. We talk about heaven, but not,
right.
And so that,
right.
that gets kind of weird. And then, you know, for folks like us, maybe we'll, I think it'd be good to talk about, so what do you and I do to kind of during Holy Week or during Easter to try and make sure it's a meaningful weekend?
How to maximize it.
How to maximize
yeah.
it. And
yeah.
I don't know that I have a lot of great answers for that, but there's certainly things that I do.
Right.
And then, you know, obviously silly question, like the whole Easter bunny thing is kind of weirds me out, and the whole idea that there's a bunny like dropping chicken eggs, I don't understand. I just don't understand.
The math by itself, or at least the science of it, is a little suspect.
It is a little weird. So let's start. I want to start with that because you have young kids. My kids are long, you know, past the Easter bunny thing. So do you do Easter bunny?
That's a great question. I don't know. It's not like a conscious thing. I do not do the Easter bunny in the house. Like, we do not have I don't have an Easter bunny suit just hanging in the back. I know. It would be, I mean, that would be the creepiest thing. I have, just as a background, I have a huge fear of clowns, and Easter bunny suits and clown suits are in the same family
right.
for me. So that's just not happening. But it is interesting because, you know, on the surface, like I think sometimes people get too worked up over this thing. Like, honestly,
yeah.
if one of my kids came back with a chocolate Easter bunny, I would have a bite, you know, and
sure.
it'd be great. And we've done Easter egg hunts. I mean, did you do Easter egg hunts
oh,
with
yeah.
the girls?
Oh yeah. So we didn't, you know, we totally did the Easter bunny. We did Easter. I also did not have a suit, an yeah. Easter bunny suit.
That's
but
that's
we hid the eggs. We did all the fun stuff. I just don't, for me, and maybe this is just my personality, there's no harm in any of that
right.
stuff. But it does make me ask, but why? Like, why do we do that? You know, like, why is it that we're just sort of uncomfortable with what Easter actually stands for, and
huh.
we need something that's fun for the kids. And
right.
so, how about a bunny? How about eggs? You know, like I don't know the history behind the whole thing, but it's certainly, you know, it's all in good fun and all that kind of stuff. But it is kind of odd.
But I do think that's an interesting theory because it is hard. We have one of those children's Bibles that we go through with the kids, and it is a challenge because my son loves my older one. I have a 4-year-old, and he loves his children's Bible, and he loves the story of the crucifixion. Like, he'll want to read that. And it's a challenge because I'm like, I'm with my four-year-old. And, you know, and most of the time I think some really good children's Bibles do a good job of kind of balancing the realness of it, but also, hey, this is a children's story. And there's really no way to balance the the crucifixion.
Right.
I mean, it's just a brutal event. And so I probably overthink it more than my kids do, but it is one of those things where it's like, wow, this is a heavy story. And so I could see why clinging to having a, hey, here's the Easter, that's really sad, but here's the Easter bunny. It does feel better and makes it a little less gruesome. And so I could see why he's kind of, the Easter bunny's kind of hung around. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's not something where I'm picketing or anything like that, but it is a strange thing.
Yeah. Okay. So one thing that you can you can pretty much take to the bank is that every spring when you go, you know, when you turn on the TV or when you go, you know, you look at the newsstands or whatever, there's going to be some type of article on, you know, Jesus's face is going to be on Newsweek or Time or whatever. And it's some story about the real Jesus, or it's going to be a National Geographic or Discovery Channel or History Channel or whatever special about the real Jesus, you know, and some document was, you know, come up and like, is he really? So what do you like? As a pastor, you've been pastor for lots of years, so have I, and we've seen these come, you know, every single spring.
They always come at Easter or Christmas, right. You know, either one of those things. It always has the really tense music and the, you know, the Morgan Freeman or somebody on there that is claiming to have unearthed. I mean, there's some kind of scientific discovery or new document or new thing that leaves with the tagline of, okay, this is... You didn't know the whole story, but now
and sometimes
we have that
you watch
story.
It, and the trailers are sensational, but they pretty much come to the same conclusion. You know what I mean? It's like that's nothing new.
That's so true.
But sometimes it's like some other thing, you know, some other document or whatever that was unearthed. So what do you like? How do you respond to that?
No, it was interesting. When I was in seminary, I had a professor. I mean, we had him on an earlier episode, Dr. Bach.
Oh yeah.
And he did something fascinating, which I wish I had recorded it because it'd be a long recording. But what he basically did is he took one of those old CNN specials. I don't know which one it was. I mean, they have one every year, but he took one of those specials and he would press pause on it. And when there would be a claim that was made, and he'd either say, "Hey, that's something we probably have to wrestle with," or he would say, "Hey, this is just one person's, you know, viewpoint," mm-hmm. and everything like that. And I think one of the overarching comments he made is that on those specials, it tends to be the same five scholars, you mm-hmm. know, that you would see across each of them.
Right.
And that's not taking – I mean, they're probably very well respected in their mm-hmm. fields, but they have a certain viewpoint and that they're coming from. And I think what stood out to me, what comforted me that I took away was that, hey, there are some really smart people on both sides, but if I hear a claim that's being made, there is probably a 99% certainty that there is a really smart scholar who does believe in the resurrection, who does believe in the historical Jesus and the Bible and all that, who probably has a really good argument to be made mm-hmm. that is just not being represented here.
Right. Yeah.
Is that how you've interacted with those?
Yeah, it is. And so... And it's easy. I mean, and the thing that I sort of have to remember, and when I've had conversations with folks, is, you know, and we're going to talk here in just a little bit, that the resurrection as a historical event is the foundation of the Christian faith. And so it would make sense that that would be an area that where skeptics would want to attack. But it's also not new. Like, that's been going on for 2,000 years and with different things. And when a scroll, you know, some long lost thing, you know, sort of comes up that has a very different view of Jesus. Like, I don't know that sort of average folks sort of realize that there was fan fiction being written in the early church about Jesus and, you know, that kind of stuff. And so, and there was a whole process by which, the, the books that were canonized in the New Testament and those types of things that were sort of verified and that stuff. And so it shouldn't shock us that that other documents sort of pop up that are all over the place. You know,
right.
It's not like there's a trove of documents that all agree with each other,
right?
That are different. You know what I mean? So I think that just because something is, I think like there's all of this evidence pointing to the historical Jesus in the New Testament account of Jesus, and then when one thing pops up, we might be prone to say, well, but I'm going to believe that,
right?
You know what I mean?
Which is
just kind of not very honest, a way to approach it.
And I liked your fan fiction thing,
yeah,
because I think that's actually pretty helpful. Mm-hmm. Is like, you know, are we talking about George Lucas Star Wars, or are we talking about like whatever else,
yeah,
someone's name Star Wars that shows up in half price books? You know,
right.
It's like, and we understand that it's like there are ideas that inspired people that may not have been oftentimes inspired in the way that Jesus meant to inspire. And the New Testament is all about that, about, you know, leaders saying, watch out for the false teachers, you know, that there's these different ideas or stories, and they were correcting them.
Yeah.
And the church was passionate about correcting them. So I think the fact that they exist shouldn't really disturb us. It should,
right,
just be like, well, that's just the way that,
yeah,
all those things were.
And shouldn't surprise us.
I mean, Greg, one of the things that they talk about a lot in these things is, well, hey, that does it really matter? You know, like, does it really, really matter if Jesus historically existed, if he historically rose from the dead? You know, you'll oftentimes in those different documentaries and things, it would even turn into, hey, Jesus set such a great example with his life. His teachings are so beautiful that we want to emulate, and there's good things to learn, that whether the point by point or play by play actually happened, there's value there.
Mm-hmm.
That's what a lot of times these documentaries will come away. And so why does it matter that much if he, well, I mean, one, existed, but two, if he actually rose from the dead?
Right.
What would you say to somebody as they think about that?
Well, probably the first things that pop into my head, there's probably three or four things that sort of jump into my head. One is that Jesus predicted his own resurrection.
Yeah.
And so that kind of matters, you
right,
know, that
right.
Jesus said that he would, that this would happen. And so when him rising from the dead validates his claims, and it validates his identity as to who he is. And the New Testament writers talk about that it does. His resurrection kind of proves some things about him. It also proves theologically, and this is really, really important, it proves that his sacrifice was sufficient.
Hmm.
If we claim that, if we hold to substitutionary atonement, that Christ died as a sacrifice for sins, his resurrection demonstrates that sacrifice was sufficient, and now death has no claim on him,
yeah,
anymore.
Yeah.
That he paid it in full, and there's and that really matters. It matters to my salvation, and it matters to yours,
yeah,
because had he not risen from the dead, then he's not who he said he was. And two, he would still be paying for my sins or yours or for his own, because if he's not who he said he was, then everything falls apart,
right,
you know?
Right.
So his resurrection proves that his sacrifice was sufficient. And it also, you know, Paul talks about, and I think we'll come back around to 1 Corinthians 15, and like any of our listeners, that would be a great, if like the whole concept of resurrection and why Jesus' resurrection matters to us or whatever, Paul really dives into it in 1 Corinthians 15. But he talks about Jesus being the first fruits of something that's going to happen in our own lives.
Hmm.
So he talks about our own resurrection and that Jesus's resurrection was not just something that proves that the cross was sufficient. It was he's actually doing something that will also be done in our lives,
yes,
which is something that it's puzzling why we don't talk about that. And we're going to get to that in just a minute, because I have some questions about that. But those are some of the things that first, you know, pop into my head.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's not like, even in the New Testament accounts, Jesus coming back to life is not, he's not the only one that does that, you know.
Right.
You have Lazarus,
mm-hmm,
is a good example of that. The girl that he healed that, mm-hmm, had fallen asleep. And so it's you know, I was thinking about this. Okay, well, what made, you know, if he wasn't the only account of that, well, what makes Jesus's resurrection stand out on that? Mm-hmm. And there was one article I looked at that worded it in an interesting way where they said, well, you know, basically the other, I mean, even with Lazarus or the people that Jesus healed, you know, you could maybe think of it as almost like a resuscitation for a moment. Like, I mean, not that they had actually died and he brought mm-hmm. them back, but the idea that those people, I mean, they eventually died again.
Right.
And Jesus's claims that he made about himself was that he is still alive. Like he is resurrected to no end. Mm-hmm. And that that resurrection was a first fruit, like that meant something, that mm-hmm. was accomplishing something that could not have been accomplished without that happening.
Yeah.
And so it's just fascinating to me that the amount that, yeah, we just don't talk about that as mm-hmm. much as we could.
And I think, you know, there's, you know, something else sort of pops up that if, you know, and I know like Andy Stanley, you know, a pastor that we both have listened to, and he is a great pastor in Atlanta, you know, has talked about like with, if Jesus predicted his own death and resurrection, that's somebody who's worthy of being listened to, you know, that there is something very, very special about that. And that means that we can affirm what Jesus affirmed, which then opens up all kinds of, you know, like, and Andy Stanley would make the argument, I would tend to agree, that the foundation of our faith is not a book. It's an event,
right?
That Jesus rose from the dead, and that we are sort of placing our faith on that, and that we are affirming the things that Jesus affirmed, and we're basing our life upon his life and death and resurrection, and that sort of changes everything. And so when you raise the question, well, why does it really matter that he rose from the dead? Or maybe it's just sort of a spiritualizing, you know, he's alive in our hearts, or, you know, like that type of thing. He didn't actually physically rise from the dead. Things just start to crumble, you know, like that, you know, and we've talked about in discussions before, like around theology, on like what's core theology and what's secondary, like what are the things that really matter, and trying to get it down to sort of a irreducibly complex, like right there at the core, you know, like these things really, really matter. And for, you know, Orthodox Christianity for the last, you know, since Nicaea, you know, in the fourth century, the resurrection of Jesus matters.
Yes.
Like it is, it really does matter. And that there are other theologies that, you know, impact us and our own salvation. There are so many theologies that hang upon that.
Yeah.
That if that goes away, then a whole lot of other things go away.
Yeah. And even the idea that faith is based on an event was a profound thing for me, because I think it changes the conversation from, okay, it's in the Bible, just accept it. Like this is, and that was not the way that the first Christ followers lived out their faith. I mean, they didn't have a Bible at that point.
Right.
I mean, they would call it, you know, the Old Testament, what we call the Old Testament, Jewish scriptures. Mm-hmm. But they didn't have these accounts. They had their eyes. Like they just had this experience that they had with this rabbi who made strange claims, and then he died, which mm-hmm. would have thrown everything out of the door for them, just totally created chaos, as I think you alluded to him earlier, as Andy Stanley had said in one of his messages, of there were no Christ followers on Friday, like Good Friday, that they had all, I mean, you basically besides John, the disciple who Jesus loved, and Mary, they were all scattered out of fear that they were going to be next, you know?
Right.
And so to move from where those guys went from scattered and doubtful and fearful and thinking that they're going to be next to just a few days later, boldly proclaiming that something had happened, they staked everything on this event that had happened. Mm-hmm. And either it did or it did not. But for them, that one event was the thing that changed the entire trajectory, even the tone. If you read from Luke to Acts, you know, in Acts, it's like these guys, and it's the same writer. I mean, it's the, mm-hmm. you know, historian Luke who wrote it. It's like these same guys have a huge change because of that event. It was not because of maybe a change in faith or something. It's like these guys had seen something.
Right.
And as soon as I realized that paradigm, it was like that helped with reading those accounts to be like, okay, these were guys that they had seen something at that point. If I saw somebody who claimed to that he was going to rise again, and I saw him in person, I had breakfast with him on the beach, you know, a few days after I saw him die, that would change my life completely. And that's what these guys did.
Yeah, and then Jesus, you know, appeared to over 150 people,
right.
And you know, and you see, and then these writings, you know, that Luke's writing or the things that Paul's are writing, like some of these things are written while some of these people are still alive,
right?
You know what I mean?
They could like, fact check.
They could fact check yeah. it, and then when you look at the way, particularly the 12 and how they died,
yes.
You know, martyr's death and that type of stuff. Would they do that for something that they knew? I mean, they were claiming to have seen something with their eyes.
Right.
Would all of them have done that to that degree of, you know, consistency if they knew it to be false?
I would not have.
And I actually think, you know, as we were going back to the historicity thing, if we had an expert here, you know,
right.
like a New Testament expert who could go down the top 10, you know, reasons that, you know, that Jesus historically, you know, died and rose from the dead. And I've heard those people speak and they're a lot smarter than me. And Dr.
Right.
Bach is one of them,
right,
you know,
right.
like he could sit here and just fill up the whole time just talking about the historicity of this event. But Peter also, you know, mentions like, you know, just give an answer for why you believe.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, I don't have to convince everybody, but I do have reasons for why I believe.
Right.
And for me, what I just described on the life change of those disciples, that does it for me.
Right.
You know, I mean, there are other arguments and all that kind of stuff that I think bolster it as well. But that one, I'm convinced,
yeah.
you know, that Jesus actually rose from the dead and that changed those people's lives. And their life change. And then the indwelling Holy Spirit that came in Acts chapter 2, it turned the world upside down, and it all started with the resurrection of Jesus.
Yeah, it's like for me, there's no better explanation for why the church is here. Because I mean,
right.
you just know to have your founder killed in such a, and that there wouldn't have been a reason. I mean, if Jesus had just died and stayed dead, he would have been a blip on the radar. I mean,
right.
And so to go from a
because there were other messiahs claiming to be messiah, and
people that had great teachings and mm-hmm. different things, and yet the fact that this has gone the way that it is, I mean, is a testament to the Holy Spirit and a testament to the fact that these guys they saw something that changed everything, and from that power you just see it radiating throughout the rest of the story and even throughout today. And And I think it's one of those things where, because even when you mentioned martyrs, it's the idea that there are martyrs all the time. Like there are a lot of people that die for their faith.
Right.
The disciples aren't alone in that regard, but they are alone in the fact that they actually knew whether or not what happened actually had happened. Whereas mm-hmm. if you have a martyr from a different faith, that their faith, I'm sure, is quite genuine. It's mm-hmm. just, but it's still faith. They're
yeah.
they're saying that
it's not sight.
Yeah, they did not see something. Whereas these guys, they claimed to see something and they went to their grave. We have no evidence whatsoever that any of them recanted anything upon that. So it's just for me, that's why I think this event matters. Is for it grounds my faith beyond just stories or spirituality or trying to be a good person. It's saying that, hey, I think in the words of Tim Keller, he said, if Jesus didn't rise from the dead, from the grave, why believe anything? Why do anything that he said? But if he
yeah.
did rise from the dead, then you need to follow everything he said.
Right.
The idea that one if is the thing that it changes. I mean, it's like, if this really happened, if God became a man, he really did die for our sins, he really did rise from the dead, then that should change the way that I read the teachings of Jesus, you
yeah.
know, from good advice to being like, this is God. There's stuff here that I need to know.
And it changes the way I view myself.
Right.
Because if, like I mentioned just a minute ago, if he didn't rise from the dead, that means his payment wasn't sufficient.
Exactly.
That means I'm still lost in my sins, as Paul would talk about in
right.
1 Corinthians 15. That means I have no hope.
Right.
It means that I will not experience resurrection. You know, it's like all of these things sort of hinge upon the resurrection. And that's what makes Easter such a big deal. And so as we go through all of that, you know, and some of the evidences, but then also some of the theological import, I think that the next set of questions, and maybe we can address this after a quick break, is why is it then, if it's so important, why is it that when it seems like most of the time when I hear Christians talk about the gospel and what Jesus Christ mm-hmm. has done for us, I would say more often than not, the resurrection isn't mentioned.
Hmm.
You know, they talk about the cross
yeah.
and they talk, you know, and why is that? And why is it if Paul talks about our own resurrection, how can we talk about heaven, but not that, you know,
yeah.
like that whole thing. And so Those I don't have clear answers. I'm hoping you do. But let's take a quick break and then we'll dive into some of that.
Well, in this conversation that we've been having as we've reflected on the resurrection, we've talked about the importance of it, of how it really is the thing that grounds our faith in who Jesus is, that it's more than just good sayings or good teachings, that there's an event that is here. And that event not only mattered in the past, but the event actually matters for us in the present and in the future for us as Christ followers. And so, Greg, you had raised a question after we had talked about just why it matters so much, of why we don't talk about it as much as we maybe should. So dive into that a little bit more for me. As you think about, hey, this, are we talking about this enough? Like, what are some observations that you see that lends you to think that maybe we don't talk about the resurrection as much as we should?
Well, several years ago, The Passion of the Christ came out, you know, and it was this worldwide phenom movie, you know, and it's, I don't know how long it was. It felt long. But it was all about this brutal death that Jesus.
Right.
And I think there was about 3 minutes or 30 seconds or whatever given to the resurrection at the very, very end.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's about the weight that we give, you know, And quite honest too, I think I'm speaking from my own history. Like, this is something I've noticed even in my own life. Mm-hmm. When I talk about what Christ has done for us, I go to speaking about what he did for us on the cross and willingly dying for our sins. And I don't talk about rising from the dead to bring us new life and, you know, all of that type of stuff. And I'm not sure why.
Right.
You know, and I was honestly, you know, when I said, I hope you have the answer, I don't know the answer to that. I just see it. You know, I see that there's and I'm not exactly sure why that is.
Right. Yeah, I don't know either. It's interesting of just the symbol of Christianity mm-hmm. that we hold to today. It wasn't always the symbol of Christianity, but as the cross, which is, there's a coolness to that, the fact that a method of torture and death has been redeemed into a symbol of God's ultimate act of sacrifice on our behalf. Yeah. So there's a coolness there, but I was even just looking this up that it was, I think, in the 4th century that the cross was starting to be kind of the symbol of Christianity. And I think that that's probably the first thing that most people today think of. It's the idea that I think we do focus more on the death instead of an empty tomb kind of symbol, which would be kind of a weird thing to sort of have out, but that I think is part of it, is that's just the emphasis. I do think too, it's interesting as you read the New Testament, it's like take Luke and Acts, that if you just read Luke by itself, then the emphasis, there's so many chapters, like what is it, about a third of the mm-hmm. book of Luke is about the Passion Week.
Right.
And the amount of time that's given to the resurrection is fairly small.
Yeah.
But when you add in Acts, then you're actually like, well, no, actually it's a whole other book that's based on the so I think there's that confusion that when you read just a gospel maybe straight through, that even the emphasis there tends to be a lot more on the trial and the lead up to the cross and everything.
And I also think that there is a clarity. It seems like it's a little easier to understand what Christ did for us on the cross.
Yeah.
You know, because when you're taking the punishment for my sins, he took that punishment for me. He did it willingly. Like, there's sort of a clarity to that message that I can understand. Once you get into the resurrection and why the resurrection matters, it gets a bit more abstract.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's a little harder to understand. And people, I think any Christian, you know, this weekend will be one of the highest attended weekends of our, you know, probably will be the highest attended weekend of our church year. And so it's not like people are downplaying it. It's just that, I mean, I think that there is a desire to celebrate the resurrection, but it does get a little more sort of abstract, you know, when we talk about his victory over death. Well, what, it seems like he did that at the cross. Why, you know, or whatever. And so it gets just a little bit confusing. But I do, it's one of those things that in my sort of theological growth, I have had to learn, like, there are certain certain doctrines or certain beliefs that maybe I've been holding on to really, really tight that I need to kind of loosen up on, you know, that are not very important, but maybe other ones that I've been a little bit loose on that I need to learn to hold on tight to because this one really matters.
Yeah.
And in my own story, and I think in other stories, in other people that I know, the actual physical resurrection of Jesus and why that's so important is kind of in that second category.
Yeah.
That it's easier to sort of latch on to the cross. But we need to latch onto the resurrection too, because it is so, so important to our faith.
Well, and it does bring into, I think it is where the rubber meets the road for faith, because, you know, I hear this from people, especially, you know, and this has been my journey too of starting to interact with Jesus, and I think understanding Jesus's death on the cross, you know, it's easy to start off thinking that as sort of like a hero's death, like a sacrificial death, not knowing how all that works, but just saying, well, Jesus lived a good life. He was an innocent man who died. And that's a compelling story. I mean, there's so many movies that are based around, like, I mean, Braveheart. Everyone loves Braveheart because that's William Wallace right there, the way I described it.
Mm-hmm.
But the part where it starts to meet the road is when we start to say, okay, what is my, as a human being, what is my connection to what happened there on that cross? And the more that you wrestle with that, the more faith and theology decisions have to be made, that I have to choose to say, well, no, actually, I am a sinful human being that is unable to save myself, and I needed a Savior, and that what Jesus did at the cross mattered to me, not just as an example, but as actually something tangible for me. And then when I do, then it forces to say, okay, well, then the resurrection is the hope from that. It's not just this beautiful sacrificial death. It's that Jesus accomplished something for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for a lot of Christians, it's especially as we're new, it's like that. That's where there is a deeper dive into some theology that is not just for theologians. I think it's something that's like that's crucial.
Right.
And we don't probably spend enough time thinking about the. You know, the book of Romans spends a lot of time on that, of what Jesus accomplished for the cross. And 1 Corinthians, it's like Paul talks a lot about that, but those are deeper waters that are harder for people to grasp as they read it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. So then the second question, you know, if we as Christians, when we are talking about what Jesus did for us, if we tend to maybe de-emphasize, maybe not knowingly so, but sort of involuntarily de-emphasize the resurrection over the cross. I think even to a greater degree, when we talk about our own lives and looking forward to the future and all this kind of stuff, we can tend to talk about heaven, where the New Testament, particularly Paul in 1 Corinthians 15, he's talking about a physical resurrection. He's using Jesus's resurrection as the first fruit, like that we are adopted into his family, and that we are going to experience in essence a little bit of what Jesus experienced, that we are going to, our physical bodies will be glorified.
Yeah.
And we will have a physical life, you know? And that is something that like it's interesting when I talk to Christians in this type of thing, like physical resurrection or new heaven and new earth, like a physical thing, not just sort of a spiritual heaven. It's interesting how many Christians like, don't even really know that that is part of sort of historical Christian teaching. And that's, I don't know. I just love to get your, I don't really have an answer for that either.
I think it's the fascination with the idea of heaven, but not necessarily like fleshing that out. The amount of books that are, you know, out there on, I went to heaven for 5 minutes and this is what it looked like. And it seems like they paint pictures that, from just speaking of my own, from my own perspective, are not compelling pictures, you know, like, which is, and I've talked with different people about that, where they think of in their head, the image of the worshiping for 10,000 years as if it's like, just in the cloud and you're, you know, have the harp or you're just kind of hanging around.
And you're spiritual and you're like, Eric, is that you? Or whatever.
That's very creepy. Yeah, thank you for that.
Yeah.
Well, and even like, and you and I, we can say this because we're a part of shaping church services, but I think for people don't want to say this to pastors, so I can word it for them that the idea of being in a never-ending church service for people is like a, oh my gosh, I don't know about that. You know, that sounds, I mean, I get it that I'm supposed to want that, but that doesn't sound very compelling at all. And so I think that that's the part that that needs to change. We need to, because when we think, when we dive into these waters and you actually see the image that Jesus presents with his resurrection of what our hope is, what our mm-hmm. future is, and how Paul talks about it, it is a much more compelling story than
right.
that. Of one that probably my favorite image of it was written by C.S. Lewis in mm-hmm. the Chronicles of Narnia. Like
yeah.
I love them, and it's after the last battle, the last book in the series, and it's basically presents an image of Aslan, who would be the Jesus God mm-hmm. figure, inviting in people that Narnia is recreated in a perfect realm, and that these characters that we've grown to love are there. They're mm-hmm. physically, bodily there, and that he is inviting them to explore and go further up and further in into this new mm-hmm. Narnia. And I love that image because I think that's the hope of the resurrection, is that we are not living in some bodiless state.
Right.
We are physically interacting with God's good creation as mm-hmm. it was meant to be.
As it was meant to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that the Christian hope is that someday we'll be able to experience life the way that it was meant to be. But there is this, like the thief on the cross,
right.
and Jesus says, "You'll be with me in paradise." That sort of spiritual state is a temporary state.
Yeah.
But then someday that spirit will be reunited with a resurrected body in a new heaven and a new earth. And there will be a new heaven and a new earth when we will experience life where there's the way it was meant to be, without tears, without suffering, without injustice and those types of things. That the hope that God looks forward to for us is a physical one.
Yeah.
And for me, that also helps shape the way I'm to live with a kingdom mindset now, and God cares about bodies.
Mm.
And I think that is a whole nother conversation about why we serve the poor. Like, he cares that bodies are clothed.
Yeah.
He cares that there's food and water. It's not just about people's eternal salvation.
Yes.
He cares about bodies.
Yes.
He cares about the physical environment.
Yeah.
Like, his hope is to recreate this whole, like, someday he is looking forward to, we are going to be able to experience what he always wanted for us to experience. And it's going to be in a physical state. And I think that it's just interesting for me to think, like, why we don't talk about that. And I don't know the answers to that. It makes me wonder, and I can just sort of throw this out as a theory to you. It makes me wonder if that, like when I read the Bible, I'm reading it through a certain set of lenses that I don't recognize all the time. You know, I'm reading it. And it can seem plain as day, but certain things are going to pop up in my mind, and I'm going to sort of interpret it through lenses that I don't really recognize. And that lens is, you know, I'm a middle-aged, middle-class, you know, white guy in America in 2019. You
right.
know, I'm interpreting it as I read it, and certain things are popping up. And I think for a lot of us, when we read about the future hope, it doesn't necessarily resonate with us, and I don't know why.
Yeah.
And I wonder if it's because I have a fairly comfortable life, and I live in an affluent community, and I've never been of a race or a culture that has experienced widespread injustice. I just haven't experienced that in my life. And it makes me wonder that when you experience poverty, or maybe when you experience injustice or just heartbreaking suffering, when you read the passages of Scripture and looking forward to the life the way it was always supposed to be, a life without tears, a life without injustice, a life without suffering, I wonder if those start to bubble up, you know, and resonate a lot more because you have that longing within you. When folks like us were like, "Well, I'm good. I just don't want to go to hell," you know, or whatever. That's just a theory.
No, I think you're onto something. I think I was thinking about it even in my own life that, you know, when you talk about the word future hope, I think about future hope of future hopes that I have in the next 10 years of what I hope to accomplish and what I hope, and maybe part of that's the American dream mindset or the stage of life that I'm in or the privileges that I enjoy, that I'm like, okay, I have the ability to shape parts of my future. And so there's even times where it's like, well, I don't really want to think about eternity right now. I want to think about the hopes and dreams that I have for
your kids,
for my kids, for my house, you know, different
right.
things like that. And I don't think it's not like, this isn't like a shame kind of like, well, don't worry about those things. But I think it's like, it's interesting of just how easy it is to get focused on the day to day. And I think what we learn from people as they get older in life, and as it feels like, hey, my life is starting to wind down, that's where you really start to do a lot of that thinking of what eternal hope really looks like. The problem is just that not all of us are afforded those things, and that life can change on a moment. And I think what you had hinted on is, like, because even some of the things I was talking about is, hey, in my stage of life, the privileges I enjoy, I don't maybe think about future hope as much as I should. Whereas somebody that is experiencing tragedy today, mm-hmm. I hope that that's something that would bring some comfort, you know. Or if someone is in a destitute situation of like where they're in a country where there's no clean drinking water, or there's you know, some, I would hope that the hope of Christ's resurrection is something that is something to cling to, and because I do believe that it's like for all of us, that's a hope that we hopefully are clinging to, and we certainly need to be clinging to it, because there will be moments in our life where it's the only hope we'll have.
Right.
And so I just think it is it's for me more of a busyness kind of day to day thing.
For sure.
So Greg, as we kind of think about then, hey, we want to keep this real in front of us, you know, the resurrection, and we're in Holy Week. I mean, I'm sure there are people listening to this where, Easter has come and gone already, but, whether that's true or not, as we think about this time of year, particularly the Easter holiday, what are some ways that we can then make it more real? What have you learned? What have you learned about taking that experience deeper? Is it? I mean, should we treat it as a special weekend? Is there a way to take advantage of that?
Well, I can say from my personal experience, when I have allowed my busyness to get the better of me, and I go through Holy Week and I go through Easter weekend, and I'm, you know, I find myself in the week after Easter realizing that it was just like every other weekend, I do feel a sense of regret that was a missed opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, that there's something sort of deep within me that recognizes that there is something special going on. Like there's a reason why the church makes such a big deal about this. But it does sort of, you sort of get out of Holy Week and Easter Week what you put into it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't. And so one of the things that I've learned is it just doesn't happen naturally, you know? So probably the thing for me that is the most helpful in the past is to try and try to go down two trains of thought. One, like give yourself time to focus on what Christ did at the cross so that you could celebrate on Easter weekend. You know what I mean? Like, I think it becomes troublesome if you go from the weekend before Easter to Easter weekend and you don't sort of give yourself time during the week to think about the cross.
Yeah.
You just go from one weekend to the other. So just like we don't want to sort of camp at the cross and not think about the resurrection, you can't really celebrate the resurrection if you haven't given yourself time to think about the cross. So that would probably be the number one thing. Like maybe, you know, for our listeners, spend some time in Isaiah 53. Mm. That's a great Old Testament, you know, prophecy about the suffering servant that is talking about Jesus. We could do the Stations of the Cross. I know our church, most of the people listening here are part of Chase Oaks. Some of our campuses have a Stations of the Cross thing set up in your lobby space.
Right.
If not, I know our Richardson campuses doesn't have it because they're kind of in a setup and tear down environment, but it is on our website.
Yeah.
To kind of go through Stations of the Cross, that might be something. And some of our people may not be familiar with what Stations of the Cross is, and I'm not even sure. Like,
I don't know. It's like, it's one of those things though. I did it last year and, it's just a phenomenal thing that helped. And I don't know all of the history on it. I'm sure there are smarter people than I am around here that do. But I think when you think about it at the end of the day, at least the experience that we invited with Station of the Cross is it's a journey through Scripture. It's just a journey through the story of Jesus. I'm sure there are other traditions that maybe do other things that are maybe different than that. But for us, it's a journey through Scripture of the journey that Jesus took and to reflect on what that means in my life. I know that not all Stations of the Cross do this. I know ours does, where the last station is actually the resurrection. It does talk about the empty tomb, mm-hmm. Which is a profound part of that too. Mm-hmm. And so I do think that your point of not rushing through any of the stages of the Holy Week mm-hmm. is good. And that from the time of the Palm Sunday weekend, during that week, you know, following mm-hmm. Palm Sunday weekend, to really reflect on the journey that Jesus took to the cross, and moving it from just a great hero story to a story that profoundly impacts my life and your life and everyone who listens' life, that's a helpful exercise to do, so that then when we come on the next weekend, we're ready to really live into the celebration of what Jesus accomplished with the resurrection.
Yeah. And I think what you just said there at the end, that I have found that to be crucial. Like my attitude in coming into Easter weekend to celebrate, and I know at our church, it's not just on Sunday, you know, because we have lots of services throughout the weekend. But whatever service you sort of attend, the attitude you bring coming in makes all the difference.
Yeah.
And if you're going, so if you've sort of spent some time during the week and you've gone through stations of the cross, or you've just reflected and given some time thinking of what Christ did for us and suffering for us on the cross, but knowing that you're going to come in and celebrate the resurrection, and you're eager to celebrate, and you're like, if you come in ready to sing and ready to celebrate, Easter is going to be so much more profound than coming in saying, okay, wow me. I hope this is better than last year.
I hope there are more fireworks this
time
around.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I hope this better be good. I mean, it really is. Like, we will get out what we put into it, not what in our, you know, I know at Chase Oaks and at churches all over the country, I mean, it is worthy of our best effort to do a great celebration and great music and all of that kind of stuff. But I hope we all know that it's like, we will get out of it what we put into it, not what the worship staff puts into it, or, you know, like it really is about our attitude. And if we are coming into it, like Jesus Christ died and he rose again for me and he is giving me new life and I have hope because of, you know, like just saying that as you're before you come in, it's like, you're chomping at the bit to sing and to celebrate or whatever. And it's like, it's going to be an incredible Easter, you know? So, but sometimes like just sort of working on our mindset and thinking about those things is really, really important.
And I think it is one of the reasons why we do talk about even Easter being a high invitational time is it's not about numbers or, man, we're going to have the most amazing service for we want it to be a good service for people. But I think there's even a freshness that comes with Easter. I mean, for me, it's like I grew up going to Easter services. I knew Jeff does a great job of changing up the message to have a different theme, but I knew going into it, I'm like, okay,
it's going to be about.
There's going to be like four or five passages that I'm pretty solid that, you know, it could be. And so there is a chance for it to lose its specialness, like to be like, okay, I already know what the message is. He wrote, you know. And I think when we invite someone new in, it invites us into the freshness of that experience for someone who may not know that or doesn't have the full picture of what was accomplished at the cross or hasn't experienced a loving, grace-filled environment to worship God. That changes it for us, and I think that's the opportunity in front of all of us is to say, when we invite someone in with us, it's more than just come hang with me or check out my cool church. It's an opportunity to see with through their eyes a story that maybe we've grown, I don't want to say tired of, but we've kind of grown.
We can take for granted.
Yeah, taken for granted. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So we certainly hope that the rest of this week and into the weekend will just be a special time for everybody who's listening, everybody of our church, or even if you're not part of our church and you sort of found our podcast somehow, we hope that you find somewhere to worship this weekend and really celebrate what Jesus, this incredible, incredible story of what our Savior did for us. And so we hope it's a great weekend, a great rest of the week and great weekend for you. And So if you want to close this out, Eric, that'd be awesome.
In my normal way.
In your normal way.
Yeah.
Give the credits.
You know, hey, I just, you know, I bring it.
You do.
Know? Well, this does conclude our episode of the Page 2 Podcast. As always, we love hearing from you, and we have lots of ways for you to do that. We have a Facebook page. We have our website, which is the easiest way to find out how you can subscribe to our podcast. You can leave comments there. We'd love to hear comments about what you thought about with this episode, things that challenged you, things you disagreed with, things you'd like to hear more about. So we're just grateful that you're here to journey with us. And you can find all of that at page2podcast.com. We want to give a special thanks and shout out to the Center for Church Renewal, David Powers, our technical expert, as well as our musical friend, Reflect, for the sweet beats that he gave us for this episode. Thanks for being with us. We'll see you next time.